Good afternoon. I forgot to introduce myself this morning. My name is Charles Fletcher, Chuck Fletcher, as
Hi,
known
Chuck.
By my friends. And I've gratefully been given this honor to be your convention chairperson for this convention. I've been sober since May 17th of 1984 due to the grace of God, AA, my mother sitting in the Adoration Chapel and praying all those Hail Marys, and I've been a member of Calyx for the last 3 years, and I'm grateful to be a member of Calyx. Chaz, our president, just received his 20-year medallion on July 13th. And it's Tracy's birthday today. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Tracy. Happy birthday to you. And one more thing, somebody lost a real worn Matt Talbot medal yesterday, and it was found by someone here, and they turned it in, and I'll have it if you ask me for it. And our next speaker today is going to be Father David McCauley, and he works for the Archdiocese working with alcoholism, and I would like to introduce him to you.
He said, I am Father Dave McCauley. I am an alcoholic, and I'm pleased to be with you today. Jim reminded me that it was about 26 months ago tomorrow that he was among those who sat in the recreation room at my home and convinced me that maybe this time I should really stop drinking. And by the grace of God, it's been 26 months ago since I had a drink. I'll talk a little bit more about that. My mother always used to say, there's no fool like an old fool. And maybe that applies to one who is so late in finding sobriety in his life. But a little bit of who I am as I start. I grew up in an alcoholic family. My father died of a heart attack at age 56 when I was 15. And mom died of alcoholism when I was 21. I don't know if we knew then really what alcoholism was, especially in Dad's case. So he was the one whose personality really probably changed the most when he did drink. They were both what we would call really very high-functioning alcoholics. Dad worked his way up from being a section hand to vice president of a transcontinental railroad. He was working on the day he died. As a matter of fact, he walked in from Mass at St. Mary's in downtown St. Paul and dropped dead in the office. And mom was also very much a functioning kind of a person. I'm the youngest of three kids. Each of us is 9 years apart. Being the youngest, I was spoiled. They had a lot more to give and to share along material lines than they did with the other kids, though all of us went through college. But the message that I really remember from my childhood from both mom and dad was succeed. Be a success. That was so deeply ingrained into me. And really, not they didn't mean get rich, but they meant work hard, get yourself a decent job, and take care of yourself. And they assumed that probably would involve rearing a family and a job that had some meaning. And if I came home with a low grade on a report card, I heard the lecture on, you can do better than this kid, and I expect you to be doing better. Very, very supportive. I remember it wasn't long before Dad died. And I came home, and I had been out someplace or another, and he was up, and he had had a few drinks, but he wanted to talk. But among other things, he shared, he said, Dave, you can do absolutely anything you want to in the world. God damn it, do it. Don't blow the opportunity. So I had all the support in the world, but I say it was that success, and that's going to come up a little bit later as I talk. Church was a very big thing in our family, even though Mom and Dad were both functioning alcoholics. Dad, probably more than Mom. He prayed the office almost daily in the last several years of his life. I remember a rather humorous incident from that. We had a pretty sizable two-story home, and I don't know, a couple of my buddies were in, and we were raising some cane downstairs, and pretty well from upstairs came the shot, "God damn it, shut up down there, I'm trying to pray." And that was my dad. He had a vocabulary like nothing, but he was a good and a hardworking and a holy man that had a terrible illness. As I mentioned a moment ago, he dropped dead actually going home back to work from Mass. And I remember he and I would walk over to the old Visitation Convent on Fairmont Avenue for weekday Mass pretty regularly. We lived only about 3 blocks from there. And that's where I grew up. I began drinking during my college years. I wouldn't have dared drink in high school. My parents would have killed me if they found out that I was drinking when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. And I don't recall that I really wanted to drink very badly either, but I know that the real motivation was that would be the end of the wheels and that would be the end of all sorts of things. And I didn't drink at all. And my drinking was pretty limited once I started when I was 18 or 19. But my drinking was pretty limited because I was in a seminary for 9 months out of the year, and seminaries sort of resembled prisons in those days. You didn't get out very often. There was not really much opportunity to have a drink if I did want to. Oh, during the summer, we'd go out and we'd have some drinks at night, or we'd be over at one of the guys' houses playing poker and have a few beers, but very, very little drinking. But strange as it may seem, ordination brought a great deal of freedom, and it also brought a lot of priest drinking buddies. In fact, when I first met, I was appalled, because I'm an old man. I've been ordained 46 and a half years. And back in the days when I was first ordained, priest retreats and 40 hours devotions were real scandals. The guys would sit up all night playing poker and drinking, and 40 hours would go on for 40 hours after 40 hours was over, and that was just kind of the culture, the clerical culture of that day. And I say I was really sort of overwhelmed by it, but I got into it pretty easily. A move to, and also, you know, I couldn't believe how all of the parishioners always wanted to buy Father a drink down at the KC Hall. The KC Hall was 2 blocks away from the rectory, and the other associate and I would go down there before dinner, and everybody in the place wanted to buy us drinks, and we let them do it. It was okay. And then, 2 years after ordination, I moved into a campus ministry situation. Well, that let me relive the college years that I missed in the seminary, because I wasn't that much older than the students in the seminary at the university, and I spent a lot of time with them down at Chubb's Pub in Fargo, and various other places. I remember there was a fella who is still a very or a fairly popular musician, a Johnny Holm. Was in the Newman Center. In fact, I received John into the Catholic Church. He's since become a Baptist, but I received him into the Catholic Church at one time, and he was quite a musician, and we'd go over to the Holiday Inn, and he'd get us dancing on tables after having enough drinks. So that was just great. I was probably addicted by about 1970, about 7 years after I was ordained. I didn't like to advert to it at that time, although there were a few things going on in the back of my head. That was the year that a priest friend and I got our first lake home together, and summers were absolutely crazy. We would be down at the lakes, and it's amazing we weren't killed operating boats on the lakes. Every Sunday, We had about 300 people over for Mass, though, every Sunday that we were there. It got to be quite the thing in the Lakes Country to come over to Grover and Dave's for Mass. That was very much a part of it, but we certainly did an awful lot of drinking in those days. And it was I was very much an alcoholic, a high-functioning alcoholic by 1981. That's when I admitted to myself that I was an alcoholic. One of my good friends, a fellow that I used to drink quite a bit with, had on his own decided to come down to St. Mary's and go through treatment. And we were visiting shortly after he got back, and he said, "Dave, do you think it's time for you to look at your drinking?" I said, "Yeah, it is." I went to one AA meeting with him, and it was not the most conducive scene in the world for me. They met in the basement of the Cathedral Rectory. So for me to get in there, I had to walk in the front door of the rectory, go through all the offices where everybody knew me, and then go downstairs where these drunks were gathering. Well, I did that once, and that was it. No more AA meetings. However, I have not had a drink in public since that day in 1981. Now, that's some good and some bad. I say I haven't had a drink. I haven't had a dozen drinks without being alone since 1981. And for about a good 10 years, I didn't drink at all. Although I didn't go to AA, I had no support of any kind, but I did not drink. But as we moved along a bit, probably to the, I wanted to mention, yep, I did. What I was going to bring up was when I decided to quit drinking, I did visit with the bishop. Our bishop at that time was a fellow, he and I had a love-hate relationship with each other. And we both kind of enjoyed it, but neither one of us would admit it. I told him, I was at his house one time, and he offered me a drink. And I told him, "No, I've decided I'm an alcoholic. I do not drink." And he absolutely denied it. And every time I went to his house after that, I had to ask him for a soft drink. He would try to pour me a drink of liquor. He said, "No, you're not an alcoholic," which tells you a little bit something about my friend Justin, too. But anyway, I got along well in those years. I started to become very active in adult children of alcoholic parents, which I think was very helpful in my not drinking at that time. But, you know, it wasn't good sobriety. I'm telling you, I wasn't drinking, but I certainly wasn't growing at all in my understanding of who I was or in my relationships or anything like that. By the early 90s, it became okay to drink alone, even while functioning very actively. And that drinking alone increased after I returned to St. Paul. I grew up in St. Paul. I went through St. Luke's School, St. Thomas Academy, St. Paul Seminary. But I had a brother my older brother lived in Fargo. And he got very wrapped up in the establishment of a new parish up there. He was a professor at the university, and I spent quite a bit of time there. And priests and the bishop from Fargo started sort of, "Gee, why don't you study for Fargo instead of St. Paul?" Well, in those days, they said, you couldn't change diocese without getting kicked out of the seminary. And I said, "I bet if you do it right, you can." So I did. And that was probably the underlying motive, was to prove that you really could do it. I walked into Father David Dillon's office one January. I was in second philosophy. And I said, "I switched to the Diocese of Fargo over Christmas break." "My God, David, that's not possible. It's not allowed." I said, "Well, I did it. It's done." Well, it can't be. We don't do that. It simply isn't done." And I said, "Well, you're going to get a letter from Bishop Dworshak today that I have been incardinated into the Fargo Diocese." And I didn't get thrown out. And I spent 32 marvelous years in Fargo. They were marvelous years in many, many ways. But that's how I ended up in Fargo. After 32 years there, I did come back to St. Paul to work for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. From the days I was at St. Thomas Academy, John Roach and I remained good friends, and he was not pleased that I transferred to Fargo. And I picked up the telephone one day in my office and fire going. Good morning, this is Father McCauley. David, this is Jack Roach. It's time you get your butt back to St. Paul. Will you come down and head the Minnesota Catholic Conference for us? So I said yes, and I did, and that's how I got back to St. Paul. And in many ways, I was very grateful for that, but I didn't realize the effect that it was going to have on me either. I had always been in, well, campus ministry, I consider parish ministry too, because it was a parish. I had always been in parish ministry. That was my life. I enjoyed it. I was good at it. And, of course, in 32 years, I knew the Fargo community. 26 of the years I was in the city of Fargo, I knew the priests of Fargo. Even though I had grown up in St. Paul and gone to the seminary in St. Paul, you kind of get out of touch when you're gone for 32 years. And I came back a priest in a job that met Dad's criteria. I was a success. That was very much a part of who I was all along. I'll touch that on that a little bit later. And I can't say I was unhappy, but it was not good for me, because the drinking alone certainly started to increase at that time. I could solve every problem that they had in Minnesota and federal government if I sat down at the island in my kitchen with a few Manhattans. There were no more problems in the world by the time I went to bed at night. In 2002, the effects of my drinking became much more obvious, and I went to treatment in 2002. I would say my alcoholism became much more active and serious in the years immediately following treatment. I attended AA with some frequency, but I relapsed frequently and my ability to function lessened. In May of 2007, I experienced a very public and embarrassing relapse. That's the night Jim met me. I got to a good counselor. I got a sponsor. I began to regularly attend AA meetings, and with God's help, so, as I told you earlier, celebrated 2 years of sobriety in May. The reason I'm here, by the way, my good friend and you know what sponsors do to sponsees. My good friend and sponsor, Bob Hart, was due to be here this morning, and I got a call a couple of weeks back and said, Dave, I can't be there, but you go. I said, you're crazy. No, I'm not. You go. And I'm delighted to be here. A little uptight about it, but and I'll talk a little bit more about that later, too. At any rate, I retired from active ministry on July 1st. I was pastor at St. Paschal Bailon. I started retirement on July 1st, and I did it really with the idea of hoping to spend some more time working in the area of alcoholism. By the way, I'm not working for the diocese in the area of alcoholism. They have never asked me to do anything. That I'm an independent contractor when it comes to that and some other things. But I do hope to, it's not that they aren't encouraging, but I don't have any position in the archdiocese as far as alcoholism is concerned. So I do intend to make AA work a priority in my life, working with alcoholics. I've been invited to work at a local treatment center part-time. In fact, I spoke for the first time there last Thursday night. That was sort of a run-up to being able to be with you folks today. I'll be speaking on spirituality a couple of days a month, and I've been asked to do some volunteer work at another facility. Which I should get to is the topic of spirituality. Spirituality, or maybe more correctly, religion, and there is a difference, was always important. I commented the church was very important in our families. I remember the pastor being over for dinner. Before moving back to St. Paul, we lived in a small town in Montana, and the pastor there was over at our house very regularly, I think largely because my father could get him free railroad passes and would buy him a drink. But I was King David to Father. So, as I say, church was always something very, very significant. It's something that got me to the seminary, to ordination, and many years of delightful and fruitful kind of ministry. But that success thing never left me either, because that meant I was in control. I was in control in terms of my drinking. I was in control in terms of my ministry. And and in terms of my spirituality, I was in control. I suspect you knew that's where I was going when I started that way. I was doing the things that I had to do to please God, yes, absolutely. But in a sense, doing them to please God, but after all, that's what you had to do to earn your salvation, wasn't it? You had to do things that were pleasing to God to earn your salvation, and that was me. And I tried to do what I thought God and the church asked me to do, and aside from the drinking, I really did that reasonably well. I celebrated Mass daily. I was diligent in preparing homilies and teaching assignments. I went to retreats. I did lots of spiritual direction. That was my job. And I, as I say, I did it well. That was also my spirituality, though. I did become involved in Curcio and Tech when I was both at the Newman Center and in the parish. I don't know if you're familiar with those or not. Curcio is a spiritual renewal movement that actually began in Spain. And Tech is a spin-off on that. It's called Teens Encounter Christ. But the beauty of it is that the whole family can be a part of it. And I was very involved in Curcio and Tech. In fact, I established a Tech Center at the parish I was at in Fargo for a period of time. And during that, the reason I bring that up is God at least became very much more personal to me through that Curcio and Tech experience. Before that, I really think it was probably more church than God, and God became much more personal and much more significant in my life than he had been. It was probably during that time of activity with Curcio and Tech that I began to openly accept the fact that God loved me. It wasn't all just earning his love, but he really loved me, and he would forgive me, and some of those things Father Talbot talked about. I became more in contact with some of the gifts that God had shared with me and some realization that I was able to succeed because God gave me the raw materials. Success was still very important, but it wasn't quite as much all me anymore, even as I got into as I was getting into the whole Curcio thing. I think I was 45 years old when I was first able to accept a compliment on a homily. And it was Curcio and Tech that helped me to sense the reality of God and God's love and God's gifts in my own life. And that was good. Prior to that, I was doing what I was doing simply to succeed, because that was very important. To be a good priest, a good Catholic, I think I at least moved a little bit beyond that at that time. I mentioned that I left Fargo finally. I came down. I was executive director of what's called the Minnesota Catholic Conference. That's a lobbying organization for the bishops of Minnesota. They were my board of directors, and I represented them at the Minnesota Capitol in terms of legislative issues for a period of 6 years. And I enjoyed the job very, very much. It was prestigious. It fit the success image. It was a good ministry. But no parish responsibilities. I did go out of my way every weekend and a couple of days a week, too, to celebrate Mass, but daily Mass wasn't a part of my routine there. So what I'm saying is my prayer life did diminish some while I was at the Minnesota Catholic Conference. I had a different kind of contact with the church, especially with priests. Although I loved my work, I missed parish ministry. I don't know if I even realized that. In 2001, when Dick Pates was named a bishop, he asked if I would follow him into St. Ambrose Parish as pastor and leave the Minnesota Catholic Conference. And I really labored over that one. And this will come up a little bit later, I think, what I'm getting at when I say it. In visiting with some folks about it, I talked to my sister about it. She was absolutely dead set against my leaving the Minnesota Catholic Conference and going to St. Ambrose. And she said to me, "Dave, if they asked you to go to St. Paschal's, would you go there?" He said, "Hell no, I wouldn't go to St. Paschal's." St. Ambrose, for those of you who aren't from here, was the brand new golden parish out in Woodbury. It was the parish to be. It was fantastic. And that, again, it lets you know where a lot of the motivation still was. So I went there in 2001, and it was too late. I say by 2002, the effects of my solo drinking really began to become evident in my work skills, and I went to treatment. I didn't fight the notion that I was an alcoholic. I said, I know I'm an alcoholic. I have no doubt about that at all. I did fight going to treatment. I would have preferred to become involved in AA, but I went to treatment at that time. And I guess I really had little concept of what alcoholism really is. Treatment was not a good experience for me. It was a terrible experience for me. I'm not blaming the treatment center I was in. I'm not saying it was a bad treatment center. I'm saying treatment, for me, was a bad experience. I came out of treatment. I did begin to go to AA with some regularity, but I was drinking more than I was before I went to treatment. Once again, all alone. It was all solo, but it was not a good experience for me. One of the most difficult things was I was without an assignment for a year. While I was in treatment, it was discovered that they decided I had had a heart attack somewhere 5 and 10 years before treatment, so they should do open heart surgery. So I had triple bypass surgery, from which I bounced very quickly. I was so fortunate. But that year out of ministry really did do me in. I continued to go to AA with some regularity, but I relapsed very, very regularly. And it was just plain not a good time. Once I got to St. Paschal's, I did realize what a blessing it was, even though I was still struggling. I've never been in a community where the people were so supportive and welcoming and loving. They knew I was an alcoholic when I arrived, and I alluded to it fairly regularly in my homilies. They're absolutely a marvelous people, and certainly the relapses did not please me. Some of what Ralph said, you really got down on myself. And I remember so distinctly the day that, I'm sure it was the day the first step really happened, but it certainly was the third step. I was planning a trip to Puerto Vallarta, Mexico for vacation. And vacations had been my downfall, because there was no accountability. So even if I'd be doing pretty well, I remember going down to Savannah, Charleston for a week. And I had an agenda all lined up. Well, I just stayed in the motel in Savannah and drank all week, because there was nobody to tell me I couldn't. The last couple of days, I sobered up so I could get home and be smiley and talk about what a great place Savannah was. And I did that, and I did it well, but I was preparing to go to Puerto Vallarta, and I was scared. I was frightened, because I really did not want to relapse again, and I didn't want to screw this whole thing up. I was driving into work. I was driving along Lower Afton Road, and all of a sudden, I saw him, and he said, "That's not my problem. It's God's. God, you got a problem. You take care of it." And I was just that glib about it, and immediately I was completely at peace that I was not going to drink in Puerto Vallarta. And I didn't. They practically try to pour the liquor down your throat down there, if you've ever been there. I had no problem at all. And I can't say I didn't relapse after that. I relapsed twice after that prior to the big one over a period of about a year and a half. But that was the time that things really opened up. And a dramatic change came in my spirituality at that time. Success turned to gratitude. Once I told God that was God's problem, he basically screamed back in my ear, "You're right now, damn it, let me take care of it." And I did, and I wasn't frightened going down there. And from that time on, the name of the game wasn't success, as I say, it was gratitude. And it has been since, and I'm so grateful that it has been since, because it's just a completely different kind of spirituality for me. The work that I did the remaining years was basically the same. Much in my life was basically the same. But everything behind it was gratitude. And that's sort of funny, because I remember when I taught at the university, I would begin asking the students in the class, what's religion? And basically I got a response, well, it's man's search for humankind. And I'd let them go along with that for a while, and then I'd smile and say, wrong, it's God's search for us. anything in the relationship between God and us begins with God, and we respond in one way or another. But God is always, always, always the initiator, and Ralph talked about that, the way God seeks us out constantly. And that finally came to life for me, even though I had said it to people and I believed it. It didn't touch my life until that morning driving into work. And it just all came together there, and things have been so, so much different since that time. As I say, the treatment did not do it at all. But I don't blame them. And I did some of the right things. I went to AA, I started exercising diligently, I prayed regularly, but it didn't work until gratitude came into my life. And that's been the underlying thing ever since, and it's what I feel is most significant, at least for me, in sobriety, and I think it is for so many of us. It's changed my whole approach to church and to spirituality, and it's affected my prayer, it's affected my preaching, it's affected everything about my life. That time when I was in Puerto Vallarta, I read Father Marty Papel's book on male spirituality. I don't know if any of you are familiar with Father Marty or not. He's a Capuchin priest. He's done a lot of writing. He worked, he's retired now. He worked at a retreat center over in Wisconsin. And that book just fit me to a T. And again, it brought out the increased sense of gratitude. And I guess along with that came the notion of God's the source of everything good in the world. And it's gratitude for so many things that happen. I find myself so often today simply just thanking God, and it's absolutely marvelous. And, you know, I alluded to the struggle in accepting a compliment. God has gifted me with being a good teacher and a good homilist. And all I can say is thank you. People would come up and talk about my homily. My response to the homily thing is, I say, hey, look, you know me well enough to know I'm a pretty controlling kind of guy. Now, how many places can a guy walk in and have an audience of 500 to 600 people all looking at him in rapt attention while Catholics don't throw tomatoes? It's absolutely magnificent to preach, to have that kind of control over a group. I do enjoy it. That doesn't mean I don't prepare. It doesn't mean I don't work at it. But I delight in it, and I'm sure that control thing is a part of it. And as I sensed that change in myself, I actually kind of had fun doing it, but it was effective too. I used to sort of like to say to the folks, you know, the bad news is, folks, you cannot earn heaven. Your good works aren't going to get you to heaven. The good news is you don't have to earn heaven. You have to be humble enough to receive it as a gift and delight in it and enjoy it and relish it. God wants us to be happy. That's why he gives us gifts. That's why he gives us the beautiful world we live in. That's why he gives us each other. He wants us to be happy. Take it as a gift. Quit pretending the damn game that you have to succeed. Open yourself to God. Be humble enough to receive which of God is a gift. And again, enjoy it and use it. But that's the secret. To know it's a gift and to live in gratitude for it. The motivation for doing everything I do in terms of spirituality got turned around. I don't try to practice any spirituality because I was taught that we must do that. And we must. I don't disagree with that. There was nothing wrong with the teaching. But for me, it left out the motivation. It's not about earning God's love. It's not about finding our way to heaven. It's about laying back and allowing God to fill us with himself and to delight in life and find good things and move on in gratitude. I just look at it so many different things, and it's only in that way. I'm 71 years old. I've had bypass surgery. You know what medications I take? Vitamin and an aspirin tablet. My blood pressure is 116, and my cholesterol is 120. I mean, that's, thanks God. I've got a lot of classmates who didn't drink their lives away the way I did, that are an awful lot less healthy than I am. It's absolutely amazing to be able to be in touch with the reality of God's presence in life and the goodness and the gift. I retired from the parish. Not because it's time to quit. It's time to move on. I've been so blessed in my ministry as I look back. While parish life is certainly my first love, since being ordained, I was involved in high school ministry and loved it. When I was asked to leave Grand Forks and go to Jamestown and start a Newman Center there, a Newman Club there, I was terrified to be on a college campus with all those intelligent professors, et cetera, et cetera. I was there a year and a half, and I went and saw the bishop and said, "Can I have full-time campus ministry?" And I moved into Fargo, and I became director of campus ministry at the Newman Center there. I taught at the university for 12 years. Absolutely loved it. And I was involved in many outside ministries. I chaired the personnel board, the ecumenical commission. Paul was asked if he was on the marriage tribunal. He's not an attorney, and he's not, or he is an attorney, and he's not on it. I'm not an attorney, and I am on it. But I was involved in many, and just so grateful for the variety of ministry that I had. I think it would be so boring to have to do the same thing all the time. And in all of these things, and I was delighted in campus ministry, and I still remember the night that the bishop called, and Nativity Parish had opened in Fargo, which was a marvelous parish. And I had, and then the fellow who he didn't retire, he moved, his term was up. And I had said at personnel board, "We're going to have to put a caretaker in there. Those people aren't going to accept anybody." They thought Morris was God. And Justin called one night and said, "Come on down." He said, "Who are we going to put at Nativity?" So I started naming names. And he said, "I was thinking Dave McCauley should go there." I said, "Nope, I've just discerned I'm going to stay in campus ministry." And he said, "You damn fool, I'm trying to keep you close to your lake cabin. Your term's about up in campus ministry." So I said, "I won't apply for it. If the personnel board and you ask me to go there, I'll go." So I walked into the next personnel board meeting, and he always met with us. He said, "Dave, will you leave the room for a couple minutes?" I said, "Yeah." So I think about 19 seconds later, he came to the door and said to the personnel board, "We have a new pastor for Nativity. You asked me to name him pastor, I'm naming him pastor." It was 14 years of sheer delight. Absolutely marvelous parish. So I'm just so blessed. But I see the retirement really is a time to move on again. I as Christians, we talk about our life as one of dying and rising. We die to one thing and rise to another. And my ministry has certainly been that, and it's my hope now that in retirement, I certainly am going to be able to continue to minister sacramentally. I didn't say this in the parish, but I say to my friends and others, I'm retiring from fundraising. I'm retiring from meetings where I bear the brunt of the responsibility, and I'm tired of fighting with school parents. And these things aren't going to happen anymore. That fighting with school parents, by the way, and it's so symptomatic of our day, it's a sad thing. They're marvelous people. St. Paschal's Parish, or school, is now the only Catholic school on the east side of St. Paul. 12 years ago, there were 9. And the hurt is, as they see the numbers diminish, it's, "What's wrong with our school? Why isn't our school growing?" "Because there's no kids on the east side anymore. Your parents all had 6 kids and you had 2. And the neighborhood's changing." So it was really a tough thing because they were only doing it out of love for the school. But damn it, there weren't kids there. So at any rate, but I do envision a continued sacramental ministry, and in light of the changes in my own life, I'd especially like to work in spirituality. One of the things that, or a couple things, struck me as I became more active in AA, especially a couple of the groups I go to, was the deep, deep spirituality of some of these people. Absolutely mind-blowing how it's so central in their lives. It was truly an inspiration. On the other side of it, I ran into so many people who were former Catholics, filled with anger and resentment towards the church. And, I approached and I said, I hope they come back to the church, but far more than that, I hope they deal with their anger and their resentment, because those are hell for those of us who are addicted. You all know that. I've been there with both of them. And thank God, God has helped me to let go of most of the anger and most of the resentments that I've had in my life. And that's really the area in which I want to work, is with these people who are so filled with anger and resentment in their struggle to identify their higher power, find their higher power, find God. And I'm convinced that if we can help them do that, they're going to find their way to God, either for the first time or back to God. But that anger and resentment I find so painful in these people. And the next phase of my ministry is hopefully to be able to deal with that and help people overcome the anger and the resentment that they feel. And I hope, again, in the process, that they find their way back to the church, right? and certainly to their belief in God. Again, it comes back to gratitude. I hope that I can live the rest of my life and the rest of my ministry so grateful for all the blessings that God has given me, because I have been so richly blessed through my life, and I finally, as an old man, begin to realize it. I mentioned I was a little frightened coming in today. I certainly was frightened Thursday night. Basically, I said the same thing that I told you I said in the car on Lower Afton Road that night. God, you got a problem. You got a problem when I stand up before these Calyx people on Saturday. You got a problem when I go to the treatment center on Thursday and talk. He's taking care of the problem. He does it if we let him. All he wants is the opportunity. One of my good priest friends said to me a while ago, he said, Dave, you're so fortunate to be retiring from St. Paschal's. I said, you're right, Bill. I've never been in a parish. Such responsibility, such love for each other and the community, the care that they take of us. You remember Jack, he was there that night. And Jack and I continued to be very good friends. I ran into him out at Sam's one day. And it was after my retirement party, and I said, Jack, I haven't gotten a chance to thank you yet for your gift, but I also want to thank you for all your patience at different times and for your impatience on May 19th, because he was the one that sort of pulled the trigger got me squared around. So, I am grateful for so much of my life. It's dying and rising, so we died to St. Paschal's, and hopefully we rise to something that'll be good. I don't know what's going to follow, but I hope I can always say thanks. Thanks for letting me be here today. Any questions on your part? Mine wasn't a factual and intelligent presentation like Ralph's. It was a different kind of presentation. Maybe it doesn't lend itself as much to questions, but I don't want to cut them off. Well, I think the coming to that point and the not beating myself up are one and the same. I think when one comes to that point, they accept the love for God. God doesn't love me because I do good things any more than he hates me because I do bad things. God loves me because God wants to love me. And I finally got the sense to realize that. I don't know if that's helpful or not, but I think that I think they go together. Well, lest I be accused of going 3 minutes over.
Father, we'd like to express our gratitude from Calyx International and leave you with a parting gift as well.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Glad to do it.
Thank you.